So remember the good old days of banking in America?
Well, if you wanted money, you had to go in the bank for when it was open for like 3 hours. You had to stand in line, write yourself a check like an idiot. And then when you ran out of money, you just go, well, I can't do any more things now.
Right.
I can't do any more
things. That's it, yeah.
That was it. And even if you had a credit card, the guy would go, ugh, and he'd bring out this whole chunk, and he'd write,
yes.
You'd have to call the president to see if you had any money. And
it's all true, kids. You had to call the president, yeah.
Banks have a well-deserved reputation for inflexibility, and even with the proliferation of automatic teller machines and other longer hours by some banks, for 28 million Americans, banks are really not a part of their financial life. Joining us to discuss what it means when banks don't serve neighborhoods and that large numbers of people are finding their own alternatives to banks, it's both a vulnerability and a form of innovation. And here to talk about it is Jennifer Tesher, who's director of the Center for Financial Services Innovation. So let's talk for a minute about what it means that 28 million Americans are either underserved or not really served by banks. They've given up on banks for what reason?
Well, I think it's important to note that some have given up on banks. More than half of them have had an account at some point in the past and have given up. But there's a sizable percentage of consumers who've actually never even interacted with a bank at all. I think there's a whole host of reasons why consumers may choose to go elsewhere. Banks don't provide a lot of liquidity for consumers who are living paycheck to paycheck. They need that money as soon as they get paid. But if they try to deposit their check in the bank, they're likely to get a hold placed on that check for a couple of days. And that's just not going to work when you need to make your rent payment or buy groceries.
Now, to get that liquidity, to get that liquidity, people are willing to pay a lot up front at check cashing alternatives and other kinds of currency exchanges, correct? Does that make the population vulnerable?
It could, although all of the studies show that the majority of consumers that cash their checks actually do so at grocery stores and other kinds of locations. And in recent years, the pricing on check cashing has come down dramatically. Consumers can absolutely still get taken for a ride. But Walmart, for instance, started cashing checks a couple of years ago and has one of the lowest rates in the nation at $3. That's pretty darn cheap. And the fact is that consumers are often willing to pay more up front for the certainty of knowing how much something is going to cost than at a bank where there's often a lack of transparency around what the fees are actually going to be. So you may pay a monthly fee for the account and then unexpectedly get hit with a very large overdraft fee or some other kind of fee that you didn't expect. And again, for someone living on the edge, that can really bite into your monthly budget.
Jennifer, how does this play out across race? I mean, we're pretty well aware that there's not a lot of multimillionaires using payday loans. But in terms of racial demographics, what do we know?
African Americans and Latinos are absolutely overrepresented among consumers that aren't really attached to mainstream financial services. But I want to stress that this is an issue that cuts across racial and ethnic lines. In fact, we actually think that the consumers who choose not to use banks or have trouble using them have more in common with each other than you might think, particularly from a behavioral and an attitudinal perspective. Convenience is very important to them. Respect is extremely important to them. They want to feel comfortable where they're doing business. They don't want to feel intimidated. And these behaviors and attitudes really cut across racial and ethnic lines as it relates to this subject.
And it constitutes a real opportunity for people like Lutz Urrutia, who's the president of El Banco in Atlanta, who actually caters to underserved population, recent immigrants, mostly Hispanics. And here she is describing what El Banco branches look like, and it's not a traditional bank at all.
Very bright colors, murals on the walls, music that's traditional to many of the countries from where our customers come from, very big kids' play area, access to internet, online PCs, access to phones, free phones, coffee, cookies area for our customers to come and mingle. It's very informal type of environment.
Now, I don't really know what the success rate of El Banco is in Atlanta, but that's certainly a different approach, Jennifer.
That's right. And Luz really is a tremendous innovator, but she's one of many. In the last 5 years alone, there's been tremendous innovation in financial services, really catering to this audience. And I would say the timing is great because this issue has really just been exacerbated by the current economic downturn. And I think that many of these providers see a real opportunity in the face of the crunch that we're in now.
Well, one of the things we've discovered is that people have strong feelings about banks. Listen to this voice.
I really don't think that we need an alternative to banks. I think what we really need to do is replace all the regulations that were removed by the end of the Clinton administration and the Bush administration and put them back in place. Those were in place so that we wouldn't have problems like we're having today. That's my idea.
You know, Jennifer, you talk about this idea that if there's no transparency on the fees, people do get nervous. They don't trust banks and are more likely to go to Walmart where the numbers are clear and you pay them straight up front. What should banks do to get rid of this reputation that they are kind of unregulated money houses that are running around taking extraordinary risks with depositors' money?
Yeah, I do think that this is a very difficult time for banks, and they really have a black eye at this moment. I actually think there are three really important things they can do for their existing customers and for people who they might be trying to lure back. One is to help create a roadmap for customers during this uncertain time. People are hungering for financial advice and guidance. You know, 25 years ago, you'd go to the bank, you'd sit down with your banker, you'd have a discussion. Is this the right time to get a car loan? How would I do it? How would that loan work? Those kinds of conversations don't really happen anymore, but there's an even greater need to have them, right? Because people need financial advice, especially during these uncertain times. So helping consumers to understand where things are headed and how they can get their financial house in order would be number one. I think number two is to help people start to save money. I know it sounds crazy during these times where people are trying to stretch every last dollar, but part of the problem we've been having over the last 10 or 20 years is that the American consumer has spent a lot of money and hasn't saved any. And if you don't have any savings when your car breaks down or some other emergency comes up, it becomes a major crisis. So helping people to just put aside a little bit of money, I really do think will help improve their confidence and help the bank regain confidence in these consumers.
Well, the savings rate is up in the last few months, an indication of the crisis at hand. And also, you know, the idea that one-on-one banking is an innovation is an indication of how far we've gone away from the traditional idea of a neighborhood banker. Jennifer Tesher, thanks so much for joining us. She's the director of the Center for Financial Services Innovation, speaking from WBEZ in Chicago. Thank you, Jennifer.